Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's time for Come and Talk It with your host, Michael Cargill, brought to you by Texas Law Shield. Over the last decade, Michael has championed and supported the rights of law-abiding Texans to own and use firearms. He is the owner of Central Texas Gunworks, a veteran of the United States Army, and has achieved national exposure in such prestigious media outlets such as Forbes Magazine, Fox Business News, CNN Money, AOL, BBC World News, Huffington Post, and the New York Times. Cargill vigorously defends lawful gun ownership in this country without regard to party politics. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
Good day, Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Let's praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. All right, so today I want to talk about the history of gun control. Also, we just dropped an article out of the Politico. Says they are afraid. They're buying guns, but they're not voting for Trump. And so I want to kind of mix that in with what's happening. You know, how do we get here today? How do we get where we are in this nation when it comes to guns, where it comes to politics, and where does the black community stand on that? And no one likes to talk about that, but we're going to talk about it today. I just want to stick to the facts because I educate myself. I've been educated by my great-great-grandparents. I actually had the opportunity to spend time with my great-great-grandfather, my great-great-uncle, where they, you know, educated me on history. And because they were born in the 1800s, and I'm telling you, if you get a chance to talk to your relatives that were born, if you ever got a chance to talk to relatives born in that time frame, the 1800s, they can tell you some stuff and enlighten you on, you know, where this country was, what was going on in the atmosphere of this country. I kind of want to talk to you guys today about gun control because, you know, if you Google the first gun control law, it's going to tell you a lie. Google's going to lie to you. You know, their job is to, you know, push their narrative. A lot of people are trying to affect this election this year. They're trying to push their ideas and push their way on you, but you got to weed through the truth and what's really going on. So let's talk about gun control, where it all came from. Gun laws are as old as this nation. The first formal gun control law by the European settlers in North America, in the Virginia colony on July 30th, 1619. That's where it came from, the very first law. The first General Assembly of Virginia met in Jamestown, where it deliberated for about 5 days and enacted a series of measures to govern the fledgling colony. Now, among its more than 30 enactments in those few days was a gun control law, which said that no man do sell or give any Indians any piece, shot, or powder, or any other arms offensive or defensive upon pain or being held a traitor to the colony, and of being hanged as soon as the fact is proved without all redemption. It is a death sentence for providing Native Americans with firearms and ammunition. You know, if that seems a little draconian to you, well, guess what? The standards of that day, well, it kind of signified the fact that the degree of tension and suspicion and confrontation that actually existed. So basically, it was actually illegal. You were put to death if you sold firearms to Indians. That was the very first one. The next one was if you repaired firearms from the indigenous people, you were put to death. You're a hung. Well, the first piece of national gun control legislation was passed in June 26, 1934. That was the first national, on the national level, not your individual states. Your individual states did stuff way back in the 1600s. But on the national level, it wasn't until 1934, when the National Firearms Act, the NFA, part of the President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal for Crime, was meant to curtail gangline crimes of that era, such as the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Now, in 1967, mere months after a group of Black Panthers entered the California state capitol with long guns and holstered sidearms, Governor Ronald Reagan signed a law banning the open carry of firearms. Now, the NRA helped write that legislation. A lot of people don't like, you know, people want to tell you, you know, that the National Rifle Association was formed because they were a civil rights organization and they were formed to help the Black community. Well, let me tell you, that is actually a lie. Okay. The National Rifle Association was actually formed to help the marksmanship of the colony, the people in the North, you know, the Union soldiers actually fight because their marksmanship sucked. So they said, hey, we need to form a rifle association to fix their marksmanship. And that was the purpose of the NRA. And then, you know, let's speed forward to like 1934, where you had the president of the National Rifle Association in 1934 doing a congressional hearing. He said this: I have never believed in the general practice of carrying weapons. I seldom carry one. I do not believe in the general promiscuous toting of guns. I think it should be sharply restricted and only under licenses. 4 years later, the NRA backed the Federal Firearms Act of 1938. So even the president of the National Rifle Association didn't like carrying guns, didn't think you should carry one, and matter of fact, thought that you should have a license in order to have one. That was in 1934. Now, Ronald Reagan, let's breathe forward a little more. We're going to, you know, get through this really quick. Then the governor of California, who later became president, but when he was a governor of California, he signed the Mulford Act, which was also called the Panther Bill, and is described as a state's bill prohibiting the open carry of loaded firearms, along with an addendum prohibiting loaded firearms in the state capitol. Now, any guess who also supported that Mulford Act? Who do you think supported that? The NRA. That's right. So Ronald Reagan, basically what happened was the Black Panthers went into the capital of California, in the state capital there. They open carry guns because, you know what, that was the law and they had a right to do that. And so in doing so, that triggered something. You know, the governor, Ronald Reagan, said, you know what, we can't let these Black guys carry guns. Absolutely not. Can't let them have that power and display that type of power. So what we're going to do is we're going to ban that. So they came up with the Mulford Act. The organization fought alongside the government for stricter gun regulations in the 1960s. This was part of an effort to keep guns out of the hands of African Americans as a racial tension in the nation grew. The NRA felt especially threatened by the Black Panthers, whose well-photographed carrying of weapons in public spaces was entirely legal in the states of California, in the state of California. And, the, you know, just so you know, you know, let's speed forward today. The highest overall firearm sales increase comes from Black men and women, who show a 58.2% increase in purchases during the first 6 months of 2020 versus the same period last year, 2019. So basically, the bottom line is this, that there has never been a sustained surge in firearm sales quite like what we are in the midst of today. We come back to from the break. I'm going to have Maj Touré on the show, Black Guns Matter. Going to have James McCoy. He's has a black gun group in north of part of the country here. We're going to talk with him. Going to talk with Maj. Going to talk about the election. Going to talk about the history of gun control. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Peace. This is Maj Touré. You're listening to Come and Talk It Radio with Michael Cargill. Bang, 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 bang
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Austin's Talk, 1370.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
All right, we're back and we're talking about the history of gun control. You know, they're afraid, they're buying guns, but they're not voting for Trump necessarily. That's right. The drumbeat of a national crisis is driving first-time gun sales across the country. The buyers aren't who you might expect. As a matter of fact, a very large percentage of the people that are buying guns are from the black community. I don't know if you know this or not. The highest overall firearm sales increase comes from black men and women, who show a 51.2% increase in purchases during the first 6 months of 2020 versus the same period last year, 2019. So let me bring into the conversation Maj Ture, Black Guns Matter. Maj, welcome to Come and Talk It, sir.
What's up, Mike? How are you? Thanks for having me.
Outstanding. So, man, I tell you, you know, black folks are buying guns. They're buying guns. They're getting training. They're learning. Gun safety, they're learning conflict resolution, they're getting that Second Amendment right. They're becoming their own first responders. What are your thoughts on that?
I think we've always had a longstanding tradition with firearms in this nation. I think that even if some people have those firearms so-called unlawfully and they're not violating other people, I think they've had them, you know, we've had them for protection. Even you know, if you were guys that's selling drugs, right? We all may have different views on it. Some of those guys have those firearms to protect themselves, not to rob others. So I think we've had a very good history with firearms ownership. And we, like you said, we've seen in the pandemic, the government overreach by a so-called pandemic. We're seeing people go to what they know in those times. And that's not going to no government. That's going to get guns. And now it's a great opportunity for us to make sure that we're expanding the training community and making sure that we're getting that 5 to maybe even 10 million people that are new firearms owners, make sure they're getting trained, especially in those urban demographics.
All right, let me also bring into this conversation James McCoy. James, welcome to Come and Talk It, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, sir.
All right, so James, you know, what's your take on this? You know, blacks are buying guns. They're getting training. They're buying guns. They're learning self-defense. They're learning conflict resolution. You know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the African-American Second Amendment movement, it began before Donald Trump. But using Donald Trump as the example, a lot of people are going out buying firearms first time or first gun owners in the African-American community is because of the racism that maybe a man like Donald Trump and his party caters to.
Well, you know, all right. Well, let me go back to Maj. You know, Maj, is it really that Donald Trump is a racist, or is it just, you know, there's some people that are supporting him that possibly are racist?
I don't know what's in a man's heart. I know that I go by policies. I put my politicians, any of them, based on their policies and their past experience. What I do know is a lot of brothers that I know that have elders and uncles that came home from that first step, the first time nonviolent drug offenses. I don't think the policy reflects racism in that regard. And to be perfectly honest, I don't care. Is it going to be beneficial for my community? Is it going to be detrimental for my community? If it's detrimental, like the 94 crime bill, everybody keeps wanting to say Donald Trump is racist. One, that don't put no money in nobody in the hood pocket. The other thing is, we clearly know that Joe Biden authored policy that locked up more black men than damn near anybody. So with that being the case, I don't care about his supporters, their supporters. I care about the community that I'm from. And what's happening is my community's waking up, outsourcing their defense to the state, agents of the state, law enforcement, what they're doing because they have no obligation to protect you. You know, so the community's buying guns. We just got to make sure that we get them trained. Well, having a gun and then just having it as a safe maybe is a whole other thing.
All right, so James McCoy, James McCoy with the Urban Sharpshooter Gun Club. What you got there, James?
I think what we need to look at is the reason why you see all of a sudden so many African-Americans, especially first-time gun owners, who were on the fence about even owning a gun, now going out buying firearms and getting training. Since Donald Trump has been elected to office, we have seen so many things happening to our people that this quote-unquote Black Lives Matter organization has become a movement. And when you see a man like Donald Trump and the people that follow him, people who stand up like Colin Kaepernick and maybe even a LeBron James who will stand up for black people, you see people like Donald Trump and maybe some of these other quote-unquote white gun owners, gun organizations making threats against them. So it has a lot of black people, you know, within the urban community going out buying these guns. We need to look at why people are doing it, not why what if it's not putting money in my pocket or that's not my politics or you say Biden went back in 94 and made a crime bill. I don't know how old Marge is, and I know he might be from an urban community. But when we look back in that crime bill, we understand that a lot of people were committing crimes with guns, black people, Hispanic people or whatever. And I guarantee you, when we look at that bill, a lot of those people who went to jail probably deserved it.
No. Nonviolent first-time drug offenses. Get out of here. The war on drugs is horrible.
Hold on, James. Let him respond.
It's been more damage to my black community. If you want to smoke crack, shoot heroin, you know it's stupid. However, there was a ploy to lock black people up for labor, for free slave labor. That's just what it is. Whether somebody wants to use drugs, the reality is, this is the reality, based on numbers, based on math. The reality is, Joe Biden had 50 years to get it right. The only thing he's significantly done is lock black people up. I'm not getting caught up about which one of these white dudes that are rich, that ain't putting no money in my pocket, and ain't serving my community to that same extent. I'm worried about what I'm doing. For whatever the people, their decision to go purchase firearms, maybe it's because, you know, because we didn't have these record-breaking numbers of firearms purchases as we had since February, March. Numbers, not feelings. Numbers. This was within the Donald Trump administration already. No, black people are seeing that the government in general is not there to save them. That's why we're buying guns. You know, people in the hood ain't scared of no Donald Trump. He ain't coming to North Philly trying to lock nobody up. But I tell you what, though, law enforcement officers that are going to be there, we're seeing George Floyd's, we're seeing all of these other different scenarios, and that's a part of the fear factor that goes into people waking up finally and saying they need to be able to arm and train themselves. My biggest issue is making sure that whatever their reason is, make sure you're getting trained and responsible with your firearms, not just doing it for one fear move and the racist boogeyman coming to get you or the police going to come kill you and you're not even doing no training. That's my concern. Whichever one of them is in charge, my people still got to do what my people got to do regardless.
All right, go ahead, James.
To be a founder of a gun club that's been in the gun game for over 10 years, and as I stated, the African-American Amendment movement didn't start with Donald Trump. It started with racism. When that white kid went inside that church in South Carolina and assassinated Senator Pinckney and a few other black people, and that particular thing, he did something within black people that has manifested into we're the number one consumer of firearms. And it had nothing to do with fear of the government. It had nothing to do with, okay, I'm just going to wake up and decide to protect myself. Still with watching white people coming into churches, white police officers killing unarmed black people or putting their knees on black people's necks on TV. You can hear the man saying he can't breathe. That's why people are out in the gun ranges buying guns. It has nothing to do with government. And then if we want to go back and talk about this 94 crime bill, we should talk about the entire bill. We should talk about the Congress, Democrats and Republicans. And you have a group of congressional black caucus who also voted in favor of that bill because we saw back in 94, I was born then. I don't know how old you are, Mars. California, Minnesota Society, Boys in the Hood, and Colors. When you got people that's going to drive-by shooting and they're going to kill each other over.
And James, make sure you stand by the window so we get a good signal from you.
That's right. I'm sorry about that, brothers. But when you start seeing the kind of crime that was going on in 1994, which is a reflection of the crime that's going on in Baltimore and Chicago today, that's why you saw a crime bill that locked people up for committing crimes. So to put all this on a Joe Biden or to put it on one person had nothing to do with that. It had to do with what was going on. That's just like when they did the gun laws changed for prohibition. When Giuliani declared war on him, it was the same thing back then, and it needs to happen right now.
All right, we come back from the break. I'm going to let you respond to that, Maj. But I want to remind everyone, you know, that very first gun control law started back in 1619, on July 30th, 1619, when in Virginia, they said, you know what? You cannot sell firearms to indigenous people. The next gun control law was you cannot repair a firearm from an indigenous person. And the punishment for that was death. You would be hung. That was the punishment. And then in Texas, you want to come to Texas, you want to find out the first gun control law in Texas? That was free slaves could not have access to guns. Also, around the country, right around, you know, and I can break this down for you. I can tell you year by year when all this stuff happened, because back in the 1800s, I'll break it down for you. They actually went into your home. If you were a black person, they went into your home and they confiscate your firearms because you were not allowed to have them. Those were the gun control laws. That's how it all started. Don't forget that. Got to remember history. Don't remember his story. Remember history. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Hey, this is AWR Hawkins, Breitbart News, and you're listening to Come and Talk It with Michael Cargill.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Austin's Talk 1370.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
All right, so we're back, and we're talking about the history of gun control. We're talking about the politics. We're talking about, you know what? They're afraid. They're buying guns, but they're not voting for Trump. The history of gun control. We're talking about this election. We're talking about, should the black community, does the black community owe the Democrat Party their vote? You know, why should the Democrat Party, you know, why expect, you know, the black community to vote for them? You know, what has the Democratic Party done for the black community? Maj Touré.
So, one, I don't care who anybody votes for. I care that you become politically involved. I care that you become aware of the entire political process, not just voting for one of two masters, completely unaware that there's a black woman running as a candidate for president, and on a federal level. So I just wanted to toss that out there. But bigger than that, the Democratic Party has absolutely done nothing for the black community. I'll give you, in Baltimore, where James is from right now, we got a class over there November the 7th. You know, Baltimore is in a state of disarray. Philadelphia, where I'm from, which is democratically ran for a very long time, these are the areas where black guns matter. We've had to go and concentrate our efforts on crime reduction, on conflict resolution, on basic firearm safety. So all of those things go in alignment. Now, does that mean the Republicans are the savior for black people? Absolutely not. But when you're talking about history, when you're talking about Republicans being the party that people like Frederick Douglass, all of these great men and women were a part of, that is historic. That's a fact. I want to go back a bit. That 94 crime bill that we talked about before the break, James said something in regards to, there was a lot of crime going on, violent crime. That's not what most of the people were arrested for in those crime bills that Joe Biden authored. He wrote it. He co-authored it, right? Most of those men were separated from their families. We want to talk about immigration and all of that, separating the families. Most of those men and women were separated from them from their families under that bill for nonviolent drug offenses. Key word, key phrase, nonviolent. Okay? That's the Democrat plan. Okay? The reality is, that's a slick way of introducing slavery to a community. That's that 13th Amendment vibe. Michelle Alexander wrote a great book called The New Jim Crow that addresses that a whole lot. So no, the black community has to start thinking more independently. The black community has to be very critical. President Trump and this administration have done some solid things. And I hear about, the Platinum Plan, but that money got to get right. So we need to make sure that we pressure in that. No, we got to stop waiting on anyone to come save us. That's the reality. So going back into new gun ownership in the black community again, if it's out of fear, because we're not a monolithic group of people, if it's out of fear of Trump and his administration are racist, if it's, hey, the government shut down me that, the police are not going to come save you, if that's your reason for purchasing firearms, I do not care. I care that you're a part of the gun community. Now you have a responsibility that goes along with your rights to be informed and to know how to use that firearm properly, to secure that firearm properly. So we're not adding to, gun control's argument of people that buy guns, they get shot in their own house by their gun. We have to make sure that we're doing that. Someone's individual reasons are their individual choices, and I'm not going to condemn or criticize or champion them for it. What our job is as members of the gun community, especially in the black community, is to make sure that we're there to service that community
And the Democratic Party has overwhelmingly supported the racist practice of gun control in America more than any other political party. So for those reasons all said, absolutely not does the black community, does the Democratic Party deserve, nor should they expect the black vote.
James McCoy, Urban Sharpshooters.
Okay, being a firearm historian, and I appreciate what Marge says. Brotherhood hit on some, like, key points. But I think what our failure is, we don't really understand our history. And as what you said, Michael, you said we have been taught his story. Back in 1968, you had a group of individuals called the Black Panthers, the original Black Panthers, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. And they decided to study California state law and armed and whole community of African Americans to defend themselves against the racism that they were receiving, not just from the police, but from the white community at large. As a result, Congress decided to get with the NRA, and they created something called the Panther Act before it was known as the Mumford Act. So the Black Panthers decided to go armed to Sacramento, California, which is their state capital, to protest this act that would disarm African Americans, a law that was designed and drafted and written by the NRA to take away firearms from African Americans. So when I hear Marge say things like the Democratic Party has done more to hurt African American gun ownership, for some reason within the gun community, we look past this man, Ronald Reagan, and we look past the Mumford Act. Nobody wants to talk about that. That's a modern time where a lot of people, not 1868 when Frederick Douglass was alive, but with a man, Bobby Seale, who we could find on social media, could tell you the effect of being disarmed in a country where gun ownership is your constitutional right. Now, moving forward, we want to say, what has the Democratic Party done for African Americans? Let's go back. In the 60s, when this thing called the Civil Rights Bills was passed, signed into law by a Democrat that ended segregation, called integration, created a more even, fair playing field. Fast forward a little bit and talk about the first Supreme Court justice, and his name was Thurgood Marsh. Fast forward a little bit, look in most of your urban African-American cities because of white flight after 1968, when black men and women learned the political process and got out and voted and became the first black mayors, the first black police chiefs, the first black council people in a majority black-controlled city. Now let's put again into the crack era. Maxine Waters, she did a program with a gentleman by the name of Freeway Rick Ross that everybody knows as this big-time drug dealer. And it talked about how crack cocaine and illegal guns was placed in urban African-American communities and allowed the flow of this government. Who was in charge at that time? Were they Democrats or Republicans? So we can look and see the dirty tricks that's been played, where at one time the Southern Democrats, we known as Dixiecrats, were pro-segregation and was against our advancement. And then we can look and see how the party switched, where in 2020, the same areas in the South that was once controlled by these Democrats now red-hot red Republicans.
All right, well, I think we lost James there for a second. Let me go back to Maj Ture, Black Guns Matter.
Yeah, the reality is I'm a libertarian that has strong conservative values. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm an independent thinker that picks up on policy. Again, when we're talking about those things and those scenarios, I don't trust government at all. I'm a limited government person. Any free thinking, independent person should rightfully do so. If you're having a conversation about, I don't think that Reagan was a great president. No, I don't think he was. I think he was, you know, the same guy that said Americans shouldn't have machine guns. That's the Ronald Reagan that I'm aware of. Okay. The Mumford Act and the Panther Act and all of those different things, absolutely. When it comes to racism in America towards black people, but not limited to, right, people tend to get very like nonpartisan or bipartisan when it comes to socialism in America currently, right? $3 trillion, the largest wealth transfer in American history. That was the left and the right that got behind that. Okay, so I'm not foolish enough to think that, you know, oh, because somebody's Republican, they're going to be the savior. When we're talking specifically about currently and talking about the two options that are presented right now in the form of Donald Trump, Joe Biden. Joe Biden has 47, 48 years of time in public office. Joe Biden has been supportive of literally Klans members. He gave the eulogy at Bird Spot. My point is, there's a clear historical pattern of what this person's policies, actions, and deeds have been. When you're talking about President Trump, during his political time in office, which is at this point 4 years, I can say he's been solid on cutting red tape, restructuring economies, and then. But I think he's been not as hard as we need him to be on the Second Amendment. I'm just objective. You know, I don't care about the number or the letter in front of your name. I don't care. I care about my primary community where I happen to live. If I move into a white community, that'll change. But currently, I live in a black community. Currently, by and large, democratic processes, right? Democrat, Southern Dixie, all of that other good stuff, right? Those policies have been very anti-gun, period. That's not an argument. Can we have isolated incidents where I can pick out a Republican that was racist? Yes. It's not isolated, because the reality is the form of gun control, the concept of it, is very, very racist, period. All gun control is racist. So neither one of these parties, for me, when we're talking about an individual, I have to look at their individual acts and policies. I can say the Trump administration has sent people that I know personally, Angela Stanton King, running for Congress down in District 5 in Atlanta, right? About to take John Lewis's old seat. Angela Stanton King got a presidential pardon from this current administration, President Trump, for nonviolent drug offenses. This is the same type of stuff that Biden authored to send her to jail. Those are those policies. She's out of jail. Mr. Charles came home from jail. The brother that just got released last week. These are things because of policy in the First Step Act. Me as a libertarian, I cannot say that there's libertarian candidates that have done that. Libertarians haven't even gotten elected nationally in that regard. So I would love to say, oh, it was a libertarian that did that. That's not the case. The reality, regardless of how people's level of Trump derangement syndrome or Trump like can do no wrong, the reality is this current administration is sending nonviolent black men and women home. I am never going to ignore that. I am never going to ignore it. I think that this administration needs to tighten up on the Second Amendment. We've got more federal restrictions on firearms under President Trump than we had in Obama in 2 terms. He needs to fix that. He's wrong there.
And I love this conversation. I like where it's going. We're going to continue on the break there. But I want to make sure I remind everybody, you know, we're having a conversation about this election. We're talking about where should this vote go as far as the black community. I like the fact that we're not talking about who has the best master. I like that. The truth shall set you free. If not, I have a Smith & Wesson that will free you permanently. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
This is Corleone Noir, and you're listening to Come and Talk It with Michael Cargill.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
Yeah,
do you live here?
No, but why did you just come open the door like that?
Because I live next door.
Okay. Because you saw black people?
A white couple next door barges into a black renter's Airbnb and questions his occupancy in the now viral video.
All right, so you take a look at this video. This guy was actually, he rented an Airbnb, and all of a sudden the couple who were neighbors just walked into the Airbnb. And I want to start playing this video in our License to Carry Handgun course because, you know, someone actually brought this to my attention. They asked me, you know, Michael, in a situation like this, you know, can I use force or deadly force? Am I justified under the Castle Doctrine to defend myself, you know, in this situation here? And actually, the Castle Doctrine, like if this happened in Texas, the Texas Castle Doctrine says that if someone unlawfully enters your home, doesn't have to be your home, you know, it can be the place that you're staying for the night, your hotel room, whatever it is, they enter unlawfully, you can use force or deadly force to stop them. So My answer to this is yes, you would be justified using force or deadly force to stop them and kick them right outside the house because they don't have a right. What makes these people think they have a right to walk into your Airbnb and question you on whether or not you live there or not?
Did those two people get charged with trespassing?
Not sure. I'm not sure. But some charges definitely should have been, you know, something should have happened. The police should have been called. I called the police immediately. If I'm in this situation, here's what I'm going to do. Definitely going to call the police, and I'm going to insist that they be issued a trespassing, and also since they walked into the house, I consider that burglary. I'm looking at the, I'm going to the
well,
DA.
Breaking and entering.
I'm pushing burglary charges.
You're pushing burglary charges.
Oh, absolutely, because they enter unlawfully. You know, because you entered the home, and you know, absolutely.
Well, what's the difference between breaking and entering and burglary?
Well, in Texas, it's burglary. If you enter, you know, anything that protrudes from your body, sticks to the door, or the window, that's considered burglary, and you can use force or deadly force to stop that person. If you're inside your home, someone enters unlawfully, you can use force or deadly force to stop them. So, and let's go back to the history of gun control. Do you know that in 1712 in Virginia, do you know that Negroes were not allowed to fight the government? That's right. There was an act that was enacted. It said an act for preventing Negroes insurrections. You were not allowed to fight the government. If you Google gun control, you know what comes up if you Google gun control? It comes up, it says this. The first piece of national gun control legislation was passed on June 26, 1934. And that was the National Firearms Act, the NFA. Well, that is a lie. Do you know the very first gun control law was actually 1792 in the United States, where blacks were excluded from the militia? That's right. If you were black, you were not allowed to participate in the military or the militia at all.
Were you allowed to own a firearm?
You couldn't, you know, no, not at all. You were not allowed to have firearms. You were not allowed to participate in the militia in 1792. They lied to you. You got to learn history, not his story, not Google. You got to learn history. You got to read a book. Don't let them control you. Don't let them tell you what history is all about. You need to learn it. Read it out of a book. Don't necessarily get it from online. Let's go back to Maj Ture, Black Guns Matter. Maj.
Yeah, that history in regards to the very racist roots of gun control is absolutely real. I mean, you got spots all over the place. You got North Carolina that literally amended their state constitution, which initially said, you know, all men were part of the militia. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And cool to be firearm owners. They literally went back and added all white men, you know. So this isn't, to James's point earlier, this isn't something that's been like, oh, only one side has been doing it. No, like this, that racist, there's a lot of people that call a lot of things racist nowadays. And a lot of it just missed the mark for me. But certain things are actually racist. Gun control in America, stopping someone, how ironic is that? You say that this is a human right, natural right, that's codified in the Bill of Rights to, you know, the framework of this nation. Then you turn around and say, oh, but except for black people. There's nothing more racist than that, period. You know, to tell someone, you, dude, should not have the means to defend your life from tyrants, from over-encroaching government, from just other bad guys, you know, or bad guys in general. To say that is the most damning and dismissive, you know, statement, because it's almost as if you're saying directly, hey, we don't want you to have the means to stay alive if need be, you know? And so that's really what that is. And I make no mistake about that. You know, has it by and large been Democrat policy? Absolutely it has. But it's not limited to it. It's not limited to it at all. You know, and we got to make sure that we're remembering that and aware of it. Racism, excuse me, gun control, the act of gun control is older actually than America. You know, French colony, the black codes, all of those different things. You know, the first federal gun grab, Wounded Knee, you know, turning your guns, natives to this land. And it was a massacre. They killed them. They murdered them. You know, so I think it's very important that we look at it from that perspective. So when you have communities that are impacted by, you know, joblessness or crime or things of that nature, they also try to use that as the guise to justify why you shouldn't have the means to defend yourself. And that's another reason why it's very important for us. When we're having so many African-American new firearms owners, that we're servicing them and giving them this political education as well as, excuse me, a historical education. So people, we put it very much so in perspective. You know, anyone that is in essence telling you, we don't want you to have the means to protect your life.
I'm about to get your Arona shot there in a minute.
Yeah. I need them ginger shots. I ain't taking that vaccine. That's not happening. They dying over in Brazil taking that joint. You know what I'm saying? But man, it's just government is force. You know, James earlier said, you know, it's not about the government. Yes, it is. All slavery was sanctioned by government, all of it. Otherwise, it would have been okay for people to fight back, but it was against the law for you to fight back. That was sanctioned by government. Government is not okay. That's why the founding fathers wanted very, very limited government. All right, limited government.
Before I go back to James, you know, I want to mention the fact that the self-described member of Boogaloo Boys has been charged with a riot. The United States Attorney Erica McDonald today announced, and this was actually on Friday, a federal criminal complaint against Ivan Harrison Hunter, 26, charging him with participating in the riot. Hunter, who was arrested on October 21st, 2020 in San Antonio, Texas, made his initial appearance yesterday before the magistrate judge hearing in the U.S. District Court in San Antonio, Texas. So according to the allegations in the criminal complaint and law enforcement affidavit in late May 2020, the FBI initiated an investigation into members of the Boogaloo Boys based on information that members were discussing committing crimes of violence and were maintaining an armed presence on the streets of Minneapolis during civil unrest following the death of George Floyd. Now, I want to bring into the conversation, you know, my resident Boogaloo Boy self-proclaimed there, Derek. Derek, come on in here and get some of this.
Well, to Maj's point earlier about the war on drugs, the people in the black community have always been victims of over-policing. And whenever you bring in things like the Gun Control Act of 68, where it establishes prohibited persons, particularly if anybody has been convicted of a felony, which during this time, the lists of felonious crimes grew exponentially, that, while not official, was definitely a means of pushing the more racist aspects and undertones of gun control whenever it came to that aspect. As far as this is the story that you were just talking about. This is simply the state ensuring that they maintain their relationship as masters to us peasants. Majid said earlier that essentially that the state is slavery, and it is. Anytime any entity has more of a say over your life, your property, the fruits of your labor, and that of your children, they have established themselves as master over you, which puts you as their slave. So that's kind of my two cents over the whole thing.
Okay. And let's go back to James. What you got on this, James? Urban Sharpshooter Gun Club.
Maj, he knows me for a while. It's something that I've always thought.
And make sure you stand by the window, too. Hey, James. Hey, James, see if you see if you stand by a window or something.
Can you hear me now? Am I coming in any better now?
There you go.
All right, so something that I do in Urban Sharpshooters is being the founders, teach a different history of gun control, even to, like, the non-black people who come around and have fellowship with us. 1968, the Mumford Act, which was called the Panther Act before they called it the Mumford Act, was probably the most racist piece of legislation that we have seen as African-Americans in this modern era as far as gun control, because it specifically targeted a group of African-Americans who was using the Second Amendment for their personal defense.
Which was written by Ronald Reagan, who was the governor, and it was backed by the National Rifle Association.
Ronald Reagan, who was a Republican, and for whatever reason, when the conversation of gun control comes up, you always hear, it's the Democrats. You never hear nothing that Ronald Reagan did about gun control. And reverse the tape a little bit and go to Mr. Nixon. Richard Nixon, you can go on radio or internet, social media right now, and hear him saying that he would take guns away from every American. Fast forward to Mr. Donald Trump. And this is why I say most Republicans are hypocrites that are gun owners. Because
all right, we come back. I'm going to let you finish that, James. We come back from the break. We're talking about gun control. They're afraid. They're buying guns, but they're not voting for Trump. We're talking about the history of gun control. We're talking about this election. Where should a black community vote? This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
This is Brittany Glaze, and I get my global gun news from Michael Cargill on Come and Talk It.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now here's Michael Cargill.
All right, so I want to make sure, you know, we're being truthful, we're being honest here about the Mumford Act. Because the Mumford Act, you know, I want to give you some history, some backup on that, and who actually wrote the bill, who sponsored the bill, who was actually controlling the House when this bill was actually passed in California.
Yes, so the Mumford Act was introduced by Don Mumford, who was a Republican from Oakland. It was also co-sponsored by two Republicans and three Democrats. And, you know, when you introduce a bill, it has to be voted on and requires a two-third majority in each House, and did pass the Assembly, which was controlled by Democrats 42-38 at the time. So it passed there. It also passed the Senate, which was controlled by Democrats. So it wasn't just some Republican bill voted on by Republicans. This was actually passed by majority Democrats.
Okay. All right, let's go back to James. James McCoy.
I love what you put out there, because when we look at Joe Biden and we look at that 94 crime bill, we could use the same analysis, but people tend to not want to do that. But the difference in the Mumford Act, again, the sponsor was, quote unquote, a Republican, and you had a Republican governor who on that day saw these armed black people. And I think he saw Jesus, because when you look at Ronald Reagan's history as far as gun control, he should be the godfather of it. Brady, where we get the Brady bill from. Conversation.
Make sure you stand by the window there, because we're losing you a little bit. You know, because both sides are going to be responsible for this. I want to make sure, you know, we're not cherry picking, you know, Republican, Democrat, because they're both responsible for the Mumford Act. Republican
agreed,
and Democrat.
But the issue that I've always said was that nobody ever hears about what the Republicans do when it comes to gun control. Case in point, we're going to use Donald Trump. If President Obama at the time would have said he was going to ban a bullet, let alone a bump stock, the the firearms community would have went crazy and America probably would have burned. But it just seems to me that when a Republican will pass gun control, other Republicans have no issue with it.
All right, let's take a look at the Brady bill, the crime bill. Take a look at that.
So, yeah, crime bill 94. There were 188 yes votes from Democrats and 46 yes votes from Republicans.
So that was mostly Democrats that actually backed that bill. And it's important you know, you know, when it comes to gun control, which is actually racist, every gun control bill, every gun control law that actually has started in this country back in the 1600s was actually targeting the black community. Every single law, no matter what state you're in, no matter where you live, what territory, it was all about the black community. And so these bills, you know, I don't care how far you go back, majority of them were backed more so by the Democrat Party than the Republican Party. But I don't want to get into the thing of saying, you know, who has the best master, because they both suck.
Yeah, the Brady bill also had 47 yes votes from Democrats and 16 yes votes from Republicans.
Hey, Maj.
These are the things that I'm talking about. I think that the duopoly is very smart, or I'll take it a step beyond a duopoly. I'll say the very, very wealthy, very powerful, full of resources people that want to keep the American people fighting about the duopoly, they're very crafty. They control media outlets. You know, pretty soon Fox is leaning more and more left. Pretty soon it'll be, you know, the conversation is that way. And these type of dialogues are very necessary. Both sides need to be held, feet need to be held to the fire. The reality is, it's our fault, actually. It's our fault for our apathy. It's our fault for not being involved in the political process. It's our fault for not knowing simple things as, okay, how does a bill become a law? Someone proposes it. Someone drafts it up. Guys got to get on board with it. But then the House, or who's one of those majorities, is going to, you know, push it over the top and turn it into law. With these things being the case, again, to your point, Mike, they both suck because the American people have allowed them to suck. Aren't putting workhorses, strong men and women from the community, to get involved in politics locally, to get involved on a state level, to get involved on a national level. We've allowed it to make this big conversation about, you know, man, how many Supreme Court seats can we get? To rely on what, who's, is RBG dead to determine the direction of our nation when we actually have a foundation. We actually, with the contradictions that exist in it. On one hand, you say all men are created equal, but in the same time, slavery was a serious thing. So there's a contradiction there. However, fast forward a bit, right now we have the framework. And in that framework, we have allowed our elected officials to run rampant. We have allowed it to get to this point where we're like, maybe we got to like hold on to this one particular guy staying in office on a national level, because maybe he'll stack the deck in Supreme Court cases. But how many of us are going to fight Supreme Court cases or gun cases or Second Amendment cases all the way up to the you know, national Supreme Court? Supreme Court hasn't seen a case on the Second Amendment since, I think, Heller versus D.C. with maybe Ms. Rhonda Ezell, a close runner-up for second. Shouts to her. But my point in saying that is, we've allowed it to get to this point that that's the Hail Mary pass that we're waiting on. And regardless of whether the Democrats were better at it, at racism, which they were policy-wise, whether the Republicans are more covert about their racism or allowing, you know, their racism to bubble up around black people being armed, which has happened. The reality is, we as Americans have allowed this to transpire with all of this information that we're talking about in the show today, right? We're being very objective. James isn't getting up here saying, hey, the Democrats are perfect. I'm not getting up here saying the libertarians are perfect. The Republicans are perfect. We go, nah, nah, nah. As it comes to the Second Amendment, all of them equally suck. I even got a bigger gripe to pick because I can't get a quality libertarian candidate in the position.
So that's what I was going to ask.
Go ahead.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, what politician or potential person running for office would be someone who would represent the 2A community and the Second Amendment and gun rights well?
She's running for president right now. Her name's Joe Jorgensen. Yeah. She has a master's in business and other degrees in psychology. She is super pro Second Amendment. Now, there's things that obviously I'm going to disagree with her on some issues. I don't have to take the group think when in regards to, immigration that some of my libertarian brothers and sisters, have. I'm a libertarian with some conservative values. That's just what it is. With that being the case, she's better than her policy, her positions on the Second Amendment are better than President Trump's, are better, clearly better than Joe Biden's, right?
Yeah.
That's just what it is. And that's not me trying to swing a vote or whatever. I don't think right now, libertarians, we have valid access in all over the 50 states. We're the only third other party out of the duopoly that has that. I think people should look into it. Now, I think this is where sexism comes up. Are you going to get a bunch of, guys that may get behind a Mad Dog Mattis per se? Are they going to follow the commander in chief? That's not a killer like Hillary Clinton was, I don't know if guys will do that. That's where we'll highlight the conversation about sexism. But then we got to also look at the question of where are all of these I'm with her people, feminists? There's a woman right there.
Yeah.
She's right there. Every single one of those votes, if it was just we're tired of old white men, here's a not.
And then
so
they're
going
to go vote for an old white man, the kid sniffer.
There's a black woman running as an independent for president. So my point here is the objectivity that's happening in this conversation is what's needed to be extrapolated and scalable for the rest of the nation.
And what?
Sorry. Jade Simmons is her name.
Okay. All right. I have to
Jade
look that up.
Jade Simmons. And, she's got a really good platform. She isn't as pro-gun as I would like her to be. She isn't, But so when you ask me about a candidate on the Second Amendment, Jorgensen all day, every day.
Well, here's my thing. Because I've looked into Jorgensen. I like what her stance is on the Second Amendment. But how do you know that she can't be bought? Or once she gets in there, how do you know she's not going to, how's she actually going to get anything done if we have the entire House and Senate are full of Democrats and Republicans?
I think the beautiful thing about it is there's not the same level of infighting with libertarians. The Democrats and the Republicans have been the duopoly for so long. It's a gang mentality over there right now. Red and blue, Crip and Blood. It's the same thing. But then when you got neutral grounds of people, there's Democrats and Republicans generally outside of media pretty much are going to accept that, Ron Paul or Rand Paul are smart. Like there's no denying that. These guys, especially, his father, are in a space where you almost got to like be a jerk to not like listen to some of the logic. I think this creates a great opportunity for libertarians because we have not been in that muck and mire of DC politics because we, for the most part, have not been successful there. So the reason why a bunch of people like me with Black Guns Matter is because everybody knows when I came into the gun community doing this work, I didn't have any established relationships with it. I didn't know who. So if you saw me chopping it up with somebody, it's not because I was picking them over you. You knew that Maj is like Switzerland. He's like neutral. Everybody likes Maj. Maj gets along with everybody until you do something to Maj, right? Jorgensen creates that potential for opportunity for us as Americans. She may be able to get stuff done because nobody knows her enough to hate her yet. You know what I'm saying? And so the other part is, can she get bought? Absolutely. I can get bought. You can get bought. I've said repeatedly, if the deep state comes and says, hey, Maj, we want you to shut up, we would prefer not having to kill you or your family, give me $100 million and I'll stop talking. Now, does that mean that I'm going to start going against my people? Absolutely not. But I'm going to just start building stuff and being quiet. Now, why do I say this? Then when that happens, if I start saying anything that's anti-gun, y'all are supposed to call me out. Y'all are supposed to go, Maj, what are you on? You're stupid. That's retarded. Oh, we get it. You got both for the black and white Bentleys now. So Maj has been compromised. That's what you're supposed to do when someone is not doing what they said they were going to do as a public servant. To James's point, yes, everybody's super quiet when President Trump says things like, take the guns first, due process later. That is the most dangerous type of statement from a public servant that I've heard of in a very long time. And I'm not going to let him slide just because, you know, he did the First Step Act.
Right.
I'm not going to let that part slide.
And a lot of people are giving him that pass. And I agree with you 100%. You got to remember in 1825, when blacks' guns were confiscated, where were you then? In 1833, blacks' guns were confiscated, where were you then? In 1792, when blacks could not join the military, the militia, where were you then? In 1847, once again, blacks' guns were confiscated, where were you then? This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Folks, this is Doug Man Jones. And I get my gun news from Michael Cargill at Come and Talk It.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
They don't think you're stupid. They know you're stupid. Back in 1994, Bill Clinton tried to pass a bill, H.R. 3838, in 1994 to ban guns in federal public housing because he didn't want the poor citizens to be able to own guns in public housing. Go ahead. Who was talking last? James? James.
Yeah, man. Control. You know, it should be looked at not from, you know, one political party or another political party. It has to be looked at from the beginning to the end. It's just like this ugly thing called racism. And too often, when I look at the African-American gun owner, and notice I say African-American gun owner, we're treated so different from gun owners in large that Maj had to go out and make Black Guns Matter. James McCoy had to go out and create a gun club called Urban Sharpshooters that would address the concerns and needs of the African-American gun community or African-American community. And when we're looking at how African-Americans have to abide by the rules within the areas that we live in, we notice that if I go out to where, quote unquote, white people live at, the gun laws are so much more lax and free. But as I get back to an area where black people are the majority, I find that the gun laws are very strict if I can even own firearms at all. So we have to go back to the root cause of that. Maj, he hit it on the head a long time ago. He said all gun control is racist. But where I saw the games being played within the gun community is that the gun community won't accept responsibility for its own racism that it creates.
All right, so let's change gears real quick a little bit. Let's talk about law enforcement. Let's talk about the cries for police accountability. I want to talk about the fact that we don't have a system set up so that we can, you know, we have someone who can say, hey, this police officer did something wrong. Let's push to prosecute. You know, an independent agency, you know, can't do that. They actually investigate themselves, clear themselves of any wrongdoing, and the whole system is designed to protect law enforcement. So I want to talk about that. You know, what's the fix to that? You know, because people are upset about, you know, police accountability. When a law enforcement officer does something wrong, there's no accountability there. And they're not even held to a greater, they're not held to a regular standard, let alone a greater standard. You know, as a handgun holder who has a license, you're held to a much higher standard when it comes to alcohol. As a commercial driver, you're held to a much higher standard because, you know, as it pertains to alcohol and driving even your personal vehicle. So why is it that law enforcement are not held to that high standard because they're police officers? They're the pillar of our community. Maj.
Because, again, going back to government. Government, everything that the government does is by use of the threat of force. That's it. That's why they have foot soldiers. That's their shooters, law enforcement officers. The word force is in it, law enforcement officers. That's not freedom, right? With there being over 20,000 on a state and national level, over 20,000 anti-gun unconstitutional statutes on the books, law enforcement officers, by any officer that enforces those are, in essence, in violation of their own oath to the Constitution. But if I'm a politician and if I want to militarize and have a private police force instead of sheriffs and deputies and all that other good stuff, we highlight them as this champion job. Now, if you are an officer, I have many friends and family members that are law enforcement officers. If you're putting on that uniform to catch robbers, rapists, and unjustified killers, like criminals with crimes that create actual victims, I salute you. If you're putting that uniform on to pull somebody over because you want to say that they had a taillight so you can do revenue generation for the state, I do not respect that. So when we're saying why aren't law enforcement officers held to the same standard, it's because over time we've allowed public servants, i.e. politicians, to utilize force, shooters, right, mercenaries, to do their bidding in generating revenue for the state and keeping the people in line. So much so that if you even make that type of statement when you say, no, I think law enforcement officers should only be chasing crimes with actual victims. They should not be road pirates for the state. When you say that, people kind of squinch up. They go like, you don't respect law enforcement? I don't respect the laws. So why would I respect someone that's there physically with a gun to potentially force me to do something that I don't agree with?
All right, hey, Derek, let's go to Derek.
I mean, he's absolutely right. The state has, by definition, a monopoly on force and violence. There is no law too trivial that they will not kill you in order to enforce. I mean, there's no bones about it. All of these people that are saying cops will never enforce a gun confiscation, I challenge you right now, go ahead and start manufacturing machine guns out of your garage and invite your local sheriff over to take a look. He will absolutely arrest you and throw you in a cage. And if you resist that attempted kidnapping, he will use force and possibly deadly force. Why? Because how dare you drill a third pinhole and mill out a fire control group on a billet? That is what it all boils down to.
All right. And
this is why you do not – go ahead. Go ahead.
And James, can you give me something in closing there, like about 30 seconds?
I'm a little different on this one. I look at the Constitution as a living document, and I look at laws as just what they are. They're words on a piece of paper. Some I agree with, some I don't. But laws, and if we don't like them, it's our constitutional right to have them amended or changed.
All right. And Maj, give me something there in closing in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I just think that this is a healthy conversation that needs to happen. I want more people to challenge their own theories or conditioning about the state. I want people to, you know, Harriet Tubman didn't have a permit. You know, and I'm not saying each person has to search their own soul to determine what their level of morality in regards to the level of control that they want to give over to the state over their life. So I just want to ask everybody to continue to have these challenging types of conversations. This does not mean that you hate America, you hate everybody that's a law enforcement officer. It just means you're reevaluating these concepts. So I want to thank everybody for having this conversation here today. And shameless plug, anybody that agreed with anything that we're talking about today, donate to everybody here's organization. Make sure you're listening to Come and Talk It. Make sure that you're supporting the Urban Sharpshooters. Make sure that you're supporting Black Guns Matter. GoFundMe.com/Black Guns Matter.
And Maj, send me some dates. So we can bring you here to Austin so we can do a class.
Yep.
So just send me some dates. All right. All right. And you know what, people, I want to make sure, you know, we understand that, you know, people talk about the National Rifle Association, how it was a civil rights organization and all this kind of stuff. And it was formed to help the Black community. And well, that's a lie. You know, let's keep it real. The NRA was formed to help the Union soldiers improve their marksmanship. And Blacks were not allowed in the military, in the militia. Yeah, so you can't say that was the reason that organization was formed. Okay, that's a complete lie. And so let's get away from it. Let's look at history. Let's tell the truth about what happened in this country. Let's look at the history of gun control. It all started back in the 1600s. Indians could not have, you couldn't sell any guns to Indians, and then you couldn't repair guns from Indians, and then free slaves couldn't have access to guns, and then we started all the other Jim Crow laws. Every gun control law that we have in this country, whether 1600, 1700, 1800, all has something to do with the Black community. It was all racist. As always, more guns equals less crime. You go out there and you buy yourself a gun. You've been listening to Come and Talk It with Michael Cargill.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.